is the Bearcast, presented by Bird Cultian Ford. Bird Cultian Ford has been in Waco since 1936. Ford is the number one selling truck in Texas 43 years running. The Bearcast is also presented by WellMed Medical Management and USMD Health System Dallas. Here's Craig Smoke and Grayson Grundhaver.
And welcome into the Bearcast on this Tuesday, July the 23rd, 2024. I'm Craig Smoke, joined as always by Grayson Grundhaver and Garrett Ross behind the scenes. And it is a Tuesday at 11:15, which means that we are live on the Baylor Athletics on Sikkim 365 YouTube page. And if you're watching it some other time after the fact, or if you're watching live, regardless of however you get us through your ears or eyes or whatever each week, we do appreciate you. And please hit that like and subscribe button on whichever platform you are indulging us on. But we have another busy week in terms of stories and things to discuss, although maybe one of the slower weeks in comparison to the last month or so, given the hot and heavy nature of recruiting. And also you had Big 12 Media Days to talk about last week, having occurred a couple of weeks ago in Vegas. But we will unpack what is out there, which includes another commit for Baylor football that we will start off with. But first things first, Grayson, how are we doing, man? Getting through the slog of summer nearly to August at this point, which is kind of crazy, but I guess that's how it works.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, this was a good week, another really entertaining week for me covering recruiting, specifically. It's been quite the ride, I would say, that Baylor's been on. And obviously, Dave Aranda, since Big 12 Media Days, has spoken multiple times through the Texas tour and now with the Texas High School Football Association as well. So getting to hear him talk about football, talk about recruiting, it's kind of amplified everything as we get closer to August when, real football is going to be here. We're going to actually be able to see some things, because right now it's just, workouts and football school and things like that. It's just a little bit different than what we're going to see coming up in fall camp when they put the pads on.
Yeah, getting very close, about 2 weeks or so away, I guess, from our weeks, actually, from fall camp starting up. From fall camp starting up. So believe it or not, it is here. The start of the 2025 season, even though the seeds have been planted for a while now. And let's go ahead and start off with the big news of the week, which was another commit for the class of 2025, which has now grown in size to 17 total commits ever since Ashton Jones kicked off the class nearly a year ago. Getting close. I mean, we're still a few months away, but last December is when this ball got rolling with Ashton Jones, wide receiver out of Pearland. And then it was, some slow trickle of a few handful of commits there in the first 2-3 months of the year. And that continued on just sort of once or twice a month for the first few months of the year. And then here in June and July, it's exploded. That's when recruiting's its hottest and heaviest outside of like the signing day stretch. And Baylor has been as active as any team in the country, it feels like, at least in terms of commit after commit after commit. And the latest, one of the biggest, another four-star in the lineup now is North Richland Hills linebacker Michael Turner, committed to Baylor just a couple of days ago, and or actually, I guess, almost nearly a week ago now at this point, 5 days ago is when he committed. Mm-hmm. But the running back out of Richland High School in North Richland Hills, Texas, had offers from the Arizona schools, from the Florida Gators, from Kansas and Oklahoma and Oklahoma State and Texas Tech and Utah and Washington and a bunch of others as well. Looks like, every Power Four conference in the country he had offers to choose from and beyond that. And, wow, another big four-star addition, Michael Turner. You could feel some momentum building up for this, I guess, over the last, little bit. But, Grayson, another big pledge at number 17 for 2025.
Right, and this one had kind of been, I would say, a long time coming. The Taz Williams one happened so quickly within a six-day period, and so you kind of think about that recruitment, and that makes you think that, you kind of don't look back on kind of the work that Baylor had put in for some other guys. And, for Michael Turner, he took his official visit in the middle of June. Had a great official visit. I think the Baylor staff came away feeling really confident that they were going to land him. But he decided to take his time, and he went on multiple other official visits, had a lot of interest from, you know, I hate saying random schools, but definitely schools that feel like they're a little off the radar, such as Missouri and Utah. And then obviously SMU was a big competition for Baylor in the race for Michael Turner. But ultimately, I think he kind of just kind of stayed true to kind of what he believed in after the official visit. And I think that led him to Baylor, to be honest with you. That relationship with Keenan Hall, the fact that I think Keenan Hall showed him a vision to where, you know, they're really trying to build a brand new offense and they're going to build around really, really key offensive playmakers. And that's exactly what Michael Turner is, along with the wide receivers they brought in, along with Caden Knight and their other four-star running back in this class. And I think that vision was really put on display in this recruitment. As far as Turner goes, I mean, stat sheet stuffer. I mean, had nearly 1,700 yards receiving last year, 23 touchdowns. As a sophomore, he was a district 5A D1 first team selection. He ran for 849 yards and 12 touchdowns as a sophomore on just 100 carries. I mean, the guy has put up really good numbers the last two seasons. But the biggest thing for me that I think is kind of a differentiating factor for him is his ability in the pass game. He catches the ball really well. He makes plays after the catch. And that's something that I do think they're kind of lacking with the guys on the roster. I think Richard Reese maybe will show more flashes of that, but hasn't up to this point. He hasn't been consistent. So really the only guy in that room that I think you can, you know, just kind of look at and say, yeah, he's a good pass catcher would be Dawson Pendergrass. So to get a guy like this, I think it is really, really key. And he provides a lot of wiggle and a lot of home run hitting ability, which I do think the running back core absolutely needs going forward.
So Michael Turner, the latest addition, and a big one based on his offer list and his star ranking and all those types of things. As I mentioned, number 17 on the 2025 list as far as the commitment list goes. And it has room to grow, I suppose. Mm-hmm. You know, you said at the start of this thing that it was going to be a full class. Well, they're at 17 players already, which that's more than they've had in total in some years, much less by, you know, the start of August. So where are they in terms of numbers, do you feel like, right now, and just sort of where all that lies and what all they can continue to try to add over the next few months to this class?
Right, so right now they're at 17 commits, like you mentioned, and it feels like they're really heavily recruiting maybe like four or five guys, and then also, you know, separate from that is the conversation about the offensive line. They don't really have a lot of targets that are standing out to me right now as far as guys who they're really in on or guys who they've offered. And so that's kind of made things a little bit difficult at that position. As we know, they need to take offensive linemen. They only have one in this class right now. So that's a bit of a problem. But outside of that, I would say probably five guys they're really recruiting, which kind of tells me that this class is probably going to end up around, you know, in the low 20s, which is what I was expecting. But I will say it feels like over the last, you know, week or so that maybe there's been a little bit of room to try to grow that a little bit, maybe get to 23. But I don't think they're going to load up with high school prospects. They got to save room for the transfer portal. They got to save resources as well for the transfer portal, as, you know, you kind of have to divvy out your NIL spending and how you're going to utilize that. And they need to save some of that definitely for the transfer portal after this season. But they're in a great position. They're number 31 according to On3. They're number 29 according to 247. So they're doing a great job. They're in a great position to have a top 30 class, which is elite for a Baylor football recruiting class. And Michael Turner is a big part of that, as he's the number 82 prospect in the nation, according to On3. He'd be a top 10 all-time recruit in Baylor history, or he is a top 10 all-time recruit in Baylor history. He actually leapfrogged Kamarion Morgan as well. So both those guys are top 10 all-time. It's pretty eye-popping when you see two guys like that in this class. Taz Williams, I think, is like a top 15, top 20 all-time as well. So you're seeing, again, kind of the high-end guys. They're able to go out and land them, and that's been something that I think has been missing a little bit recently.
So looking at probably a handful of guys as far as the remainder of this class goes, which gives you plenty of time to fill that out since it's just July and you've got until December to sign the first wave, if not hopefully the bulk of this class, but is notable, one offensive lineman in this class out of 17 pledges. You got two running backs. You got one offensive lineman. So, yeah, I would think that the transfer portal is going to be big for the line, and we'll see how all of that goes. But that is notable, and that's why you would save some space. And also, they've tried the whole relying on young offensive linemen that aren't ready, and we saw how that worked out. It basically burned last year entirely, and you know, remains to be seen how much it'll hurt this year, actually, as well, as that remains their, by far, their greatest concern entering this season. So, yeah, need to figure out that O-line and get that in shape, but leaving themselves some wiggle room is probably the best idea. But beyond that, looking like a really sharp class at 17, and it is still going to grow, but a run of four stars here with Kamarion Morgan and Ja'Cory Watson and Michael Turner and Taz Williams. And, you know, I know the services can agree or disagree on 3-4-star status, but that's four guys across the board that are four stars. That's all in the last month. Mm-hmm. So that's completely changed the entire look of their 2025 class.
It absolutely has, and that's what's led to so many of the comments about, you know, NIL and the factor that it's had on recruiting and, you know, how Baylor's trending, and then also the questions of, you know, does this alone save Dave Aranda's job, which I think the answer is no. They still got to go out and win games. I think Dave Aranda's been very honest about that, but I do think this kind of positive momentum and kind of the things we heard at Big 12 Media Days, I think all of that, when you kind of add that up, you're kind of seeing a program that feels like they're trending up. Now, trending up from 3-9 is not really difficult, but I do think that you're seeing some positive momentum, which is always great to see heading into fall camp. You know, they need a big turnaround, and they're going to need kind of this positive swing and this high upswing if they're going to get through this season successfully and then build on it next offseason.
Yeah, I do think that having the success in recruiting can give Aranda a little bit more leeway. You know, if they were to, you know, win five games and, like, let's say something had, like, injuries occurred and things like that, and you're like, let's just say it made it for a very tough call on sort of the trajectory. I think the momentum in recruiting tips the scales in his favor more than it hurts him, obviously. Mm-hmm. If they were to be sitting here with 10 guys and they're all three stars and you're like, okay, if they fell apart, does it really change much of anything? No. Yeah. Okay, well, let's move on. Whereas if it's even a close call and you're going, all right, well, is the future brighter with or without him? And you're sitting here looking at a top 25 to 30 class with multiple four stars, like, you're going, well, maybe another year just to get this class signed and see what they can do with it. Right. So I think that part of it is all obviously huge for Aranda as well. I know that Garrett's got a comment we're going to play here in a second from the THSCA, session that Dave Aranda did the other day. And in it, he talks about recruiting, and he just says a lot of what he said, I think, at Media Days and such about just the NIL aspect of this. But you mentioned Keenan Hall a couple times. I know that the coaches want the credit too, and he's certainly received a lot of credit for a guy who's not even been around for a year yet. But Aranda did mention him. He mentioned Jamar Chaney as well as somebody who's provided a boost. But where would this class be right now without NIL being number one? Because that's like that seals the deal. I mean, he's even said as much of, like, we've had great recruiters. We've had guys, you can talk them in, got guys ready to sign, and it comes down to it. And what's the deciding factor? It's NIL. And so that's why NIL remains like the main factor in why they are where they are versus where they have been. But where would they be without a Keenan Hall as well? Or, you know, some combination of him and Chaney and whoever else you want to throw into that mix?
Well, I mean, I would say right now, if you kind of look at their four-star guys, they have five of them. And I would say that Keenan Hall played the biggest role in four of the five. And that being Michael Turner, Caden Knighton, Kamarion Morgan, and Taz Williams. The four of them, I mean, I would say he had the best relationship with all four of them. I would say that a big part of their interest in Baylor was because of him. With Turner and Knighton, they obviously will be their position coach at Baylor, so he's clearly the lead recruiter there. Just the connections that he formed during his time at SMU, he transferred those to Baylor and was able to utilize that to get guys to have interest in Baylor, trust him, and then eventually seal the deal with them. So, I mean, when you talk about four of the five four stars, I would call him the lead recruiter for, I would say that's a huge deal. And that's what he's brought to the table. That's what he I think, was planning on doing. That's what Dave Aranda wanted out of the running back coach that he hired. He needed a guy that was an elite recruiter, and that's exactly what Keenan Hall has been for them. It's been terrific to watch. He's been phenomenal. Obviously, NIL has been kind of the thing that has backed him and allowed him to secure these wins. But at the end of the day, you know, these recruits trust him. They believe in him. And when he tells them something like, hey, Baylor's going to be good, Baylor's going to, you know, rise to the top, Baylor's going to have a better year this year, they really, really trust that. And I think that's been one of the biggest things to watch. So, yeah, he's been massive. Dallas Baker's done good, too. Obviously, he had to do well because their wide receiver room is about to be – there's going to be a huge shakeup there. And he's got to do really well in the transfer portal and in high school recruiting. He's done that. He's been able to utilize, you know, the playing time, you know, pitch, because obviously they have a lot of room opening up. So these young guys are going to get an opportunity to play early. So, yeah, those two guys have done awesome. Keenan Hall has been an absolute ace recruiter so far during his time at Baylor.
So things going pretty well in the recruiting trail as the Bears are loading up. And now, again, at 17 with the commitment of Michael Turner, running back out of Richland High School in North Richland Hills up there in the DFW area. So now where does attention turn in terms of 2025 and just what they've got cooking? Because it's been a run, man. It's not something that you can really sustain for, I wouldn't think, too much longer, because you've had like an entire month of week after week landing a four-star. So sort of where are they now? As you mentioned, they've got a handful, give or take, of spots left. They've got their running backs. They've got a quarterback. They've got a bunch of receivers. I mean, where is this 2025 class now?
So the two decisions that are, you know, really kind of outstanding that we've been, you know, kind of waiting on for a while now are Jaden Sanders, the cornerback out of Kilgore, and Stevie Amar, the tight end out of Oaks Christian in California. Those two guys took official visits to Baylor, just haven't made decisions yet. So that's kind of been the waiting game there. Jaden Sanders, I think, is going to take a visit to Michigan this weekend and then make his decision pretty quickly after that. That's going to be a tough one, I think, for them to win, just because, you know, he waited so long to take this trip to Michigan, and then he's going to make a decision right after that. That could prove to be too much, but I would also say that I think Baylor's done an amazing job in his recruitment. And we've seen what they've done with NIL, and we've seen how they've kind of been able to land some of these high-profile guys. And he's another four-star that I know they'd like to add. So the question is, you know, how much do they push to land him? And kind of how does that battle, you know, play out over the next week? We'll see on that. Baylor's in it, but obviously Michigan and TCU is a threat as well, which is where his dad played. I think the interesting thing there is his dad played when Gary Patterson was the head coach at TCU. Gary Patterson is obviously at Baylor now. So something a little bit kind of an interesting dynamic there. Stevie Amar, of course, played with Nate Bennett, who was the 2024 quarterback that Baylor took last year. He's obviously currently on the roster. So they know each other well. He's cousins with Jonah Burton, so a relationship there. And now it's just kind of about, you know, can Baylor seal the deal there, or are schools like Boston College or Cal going to win out? Another kind of interesting battle that I'll be kind of waiting on. Outside of that, you know, they're planning on going after guys who are flip targets. They have a couple targets specifically in mind that they've been recruiting pretty hard who are committed elsewhere. So that's going to be something I'd say interesting to watch. And then the offensive line is the area that I know everyone's talking about. I continue to talk about it because, frankly, they're in a tough spot right now. In regards to that, one thing I will say about the offensive line, they have three seniors graduating this year, and then they have nine underclassmen. So I don't think there's a need to take a bunch of offensive linemen. I think you could easily take, you know, two in this class and then supplement your offensive line group with maybe some guys like Colton Thomason, who are big-time recruits, went a place for a year, and then decide to transfer. Maybe you're able to fill out the depth chart kind of like that with adding some young guys in different classes. So I could see them doing that. I think they still have some young depth there that maybe makes that make sense. So that's kind of where they're at right now.
All right, so there's a little bit of a reset on the 2025 class, which has been smoking hot as of late. Huge month of June and July, huge months of June and July. This has been a great summer for Dave Aranda and the staff in terms of getting big-time targets on board and – now to the point where if you look at 247's team rankings, number three in the Big 12 for the class of 2025 in terms of just the overall top to bottom. TCU, the number one class right now, they've got 21 players, four stars. UCF having a pretty nice little run, 19-4, and then there's Baylor with 17 commits and 5 4 stars. So actually have one more than the other two, but they have a couple to four less commits, which, as we know, that weird weighting scale, like more means better, even though that's not really how it's supposed to work. And it just depends on what column you look at, really, and what site and all that. But you do benefit from having more, but they've got the nice combination of having a lot and also having some highly rated guys. So that's a good combination to have them sitting at number three currently, at least from one outlet. It's been a run, as I've mentioned a couple times now. And Dave Aranda was at the Texas High School Coaches Association meetings that have been ongoing as a annual routine every summer. All the head coaches from around the college ranks in the state of Texas and all the high school coaches all get together and have clinics and, you know, sessions and talk ball and do all that stuff, make work connections and look for jobs and do all of those types of things. It's a big to-do, a very big to-do, that we do it bigger here in the state of Texas than I would imagine any other high school coaches association does. But he had his own little panel. It was cool to see. They had like all of the Texas college coaches that were up on the stage at one point in time for like a little photo op. And so you saw like Willie Fritz and Joey McGuire and Dave Aranda, I mean, and Jeff Traylor and like Steve Sarkisian and on and everybody in Texas was there. And a lot of different media sessions are, you know, stage time, and Dave Aranda had his and went about 20 minutes or so. I know the interview's up on the website in full, or the session is up on the website in full. But here was one quote that was pretty good and pretty interesting from the head man himself, Dave Aranda, down in the THSCA clinic talking about their recent recruiting success, Keenan Hall, and a bit more.
Bryce Cherry, Waco Trib. Dave, what has Keenan Hall meant to your program, and especially with maybe some of the recruiting victories that you've gotten lately in the DFW area?
Keenan's been great. Keenan brings a lot of energy and enthusiasm, and I think he brings a really strong work ethic. I think he wants to win. He gets in battles and wants to close and finish the battles. You know, I think, when I think of Keenan and his work, I think of Dallas Baker, getting in fights, recruiting battles and winning his. And then I think of Jamar Chaney, picking battles, trying to win. And I just think, all of it, the ability to pick some of these fights that we're picking and in terms of recruits and hey, we want to win this thing, all to me ties back to we have the ability to close it out now, where in the past we didn't, and so it's while I'm way excited and happy about the direction it's going now, in the past we'd be battling and fighting and continually not be able to finish. And so now to be able to have the ability to close it out and win some of these big recruiting battles is because we have that the NIL money that can back us up. And so I think we've all benefited from that. Keenan has as well.
Carter Yates with Dave Campbell's Texas Football. Dave, going off that recruiting piece, there are now two Texas universities in the SEC and another school in Oklahoma that primarily recruit Texas. How do the Big 12 schools like yourself compete with them?
Yeah, I think we've got to be able to establish your brand, establish your own identity, and I think you got to have success playing. I think, you look at SMU and what they've been doing here this past year or so and the success they had and the recruiting that they've been doing. You can look all throughout the TCU and the success that they've had and the recruiting they've been doing. And so I think you have to win, and then you have to have the resources to go out and build your brand and find kids that match you. And, I think that it really matters to it, 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 matters first with winning. I think without winning, it's all kind of an empty, it's an empty deal, because the kids are going to want to know, especially with the playoff, that you can make the playoff, that you can be competitive in the playoff, right? And then when, you know, you're, you know, right now with Baylor, we've kind of got chip on your shoulder. We're kind of the outsider type thing going, which is cool to see, but that has to be validated come the season on the field. And so I think you know who you are, you have the resources to recruit to who you are, and you go out and win. I think those things have to happen.
So there's Dave Aranda talking with the Texas High School Coaches Association during their annual get-together, and I'm sure there was a lot of folks that enjoyed getting to hear him talk ball and hear him break down, you know, different things. But there he's breaking down a little bit of their recruiting success, so just something a little bit different and something, you know, cool to hear him talk about, because it's talking about some success that they're having. But he mentions Keenan Hall, he mentions the NIL piece, and still a lot of work to do, but there's him shedding a little bit of light on where they are right now.
It's huge. I mean, everything that he says, it continues to be a consistent theme, and that's really the biggest thing. Since he talked to you all at Big 12 Media Days, it's been the same reoccurring theme, just NIL and how it's been the absolute game changer for them from the standpoint of finishing out recruitment, right? That he talks about not being able to win recruiting battles, not being able to consistently do it. And the reason for it was because they didn't have that piece of the puzzle. And that piece of the puzzle matters. I will stand by this. I'll continue to say this. You know, Baylor's doing a great job with NIL. This does not mean that Baylor is throwing bags around and just absolutely just outbidding Ohio State or, you know, Penn State or whatnot. Like, that's not happening consistently. But what is happening is Baylor is giving themselves an opportunity to be competitive with every big-time recruitment they're in on. And that's the biggest thing, because when you combine the relationships that they're able to build with the NIL piece being competitive, now you really get a recruit's attention. That's what they've been able to do, and that's been really the biggest change for them this offseason, from the transfer portal all the way through till now, where we're seeing at the high school ranks too. Obviously, the coaches are doing a great job with Keenan Hall, Dallas Baker. He mentioned Jamar Chaney, which I think is an interesting one and one to keep an eye on going forward, because currently they only have one commit at the linebacker position in Trent Spence. But he talked about him picking battles. So read into that what you will, but Jamar Chaney obviously is one that he mentioned as far as picking battles. And so we'll see how that kind of plays out going forward as well. And something that Garrett and I talked about too, that he mentioned the winning aspect kind of at the end. You got to be able to win football games. You can't just sell vision for years and years. You can have a 3-9 season and then sell a vision of where you're going to and how you start all these young guys and how you're building towards something, but eventually you got to get wins. And that's what has to happen this year, and that's what's going to have to happen if they're going to build on kind of where they're at right now with this momentum in recruiting and NIL.
Yeah, it's all good right now, but they have to have a good season. I don't think there's any doubt about that. And, you know, I don't want to put a firm stance on there as far as like they must win this amount of games or else, because a lot will depend on the details, but they do have to win, and otherwise this is all for naught. And you know, if you go and win two games this year, it's going to be hard to keep this class together no matter how much you're throwing around and all of that. So yeah, the winning is still what matters at the end. The winning's what makes everything better. The other stuff's sweetener, but ultimately you've got to win, and he knows that. And you can tell he's a man who's spread himself a bit thin. We'll see if it's too thin or not come, you know, when the season rolls around, but hopefully he's found the right formula. It seems as though he has, in terms of ball versus just head coaching duties. That's been a major topic this offseason, figuring out the NIL piece. We've obviously spent a great deal of time talking about their successes here as of late, as the NIL piece has found its footing, and they've found their footing as a staff, and just incorporating all of that together into their entire sales package. Things are going good, but again, it all goes back to winning at the end of the day. So that's what awaits them here starting in about a month and a half, or a month and 5 weeks or so, I guess is about where we are now at this point, about 5 weeks or so. So not even a month and a half, but there you have it. Dave Aranda at Texas High School Coaches Association annual festivities. And you mentioned the class and sort of where we are with that and what they're eyeing, but another junior day on the horizon, is that right?
Yeah, junior day this weekend. So obviously we're seeing a lot of momentum in the 2025 class right now, but maybe we'll get to see a little bit more momentum get picked up in the 2026 class. Currently one commit in that class, and surprise, surprise, it's a running back out of South Lake Carroll and Davis Penn. So once again, another recruiting win for Keenan Hall. Penn is like a high three-star right now, but I mean, when you look at that guy's numbers in 6A football, I think it's pretty safe to say he's likely going to be a four-star prospect very soon. So, they're off to a good start, but they're trying to build on that. And they got some guys coming in that I think kind of continue to build on the momentum of, hey, we're going to get in on some top recruitments. And I think that's kind of the biggest thing, right? You get these guys to visit, and then you try to win some of these battles as time progresses. I feel like they've always done a pretty good job of that, of getting high-end guys on campus. It's been more so about closing the deal. So I expect this weekend they're going to have probably like 20-some guys on campus and probably, you know, a handful, maybe even more than that, of four-star guys. So they're in a pretty good position right now. From what I can tell, a few linebackers. They got a quarterback who will be visiting this weekend. Hawkins Polly's brother, Ford Polly, will be visiting as well. He's a really good offensive line prospect in the class. And then a couple other, you know, four-star type guys like Peyton Porter out of Melissa and Cy Springs athlete, cornerback Paris Melvin, cornerback, wide receiver. He can kind of do a lot of things. But multiple guys who are really, really good prospects and guys who I think would be a big impact and a nice lift to the class early on.
So the class of 2026 is on the clock as well, although 2025 is where a lot of the focus still lies. You are 17 deep and looking at your last few spots, so now it's time to start, drumming up interest for the 2026 class, as recruiting never truly stops. If you needed any evidence of that, then look no further than junior days and the start to look forward this weekend. But, one commit for the class of 26. We'll see how quickly that starts to fill up as well. But football-wise, that's sort of where we are. The commit of Michael Turner, Dave Aranda with the THSCA, and just recruiting at this point, although here in about a week's time, we'll start to see fall practices opening up and get ready to count down to Tarleton State and some actual football, which will be a nice change of pace. And obviously what I think most people look forward to more than anything is the actual games, although I wonder sometimes, the off the field is so noisy and interesting in its own right, whether it's recruiting or realignment. But yeah, the actual football itself, the thing that will actually determine Dave Aranda's job status moving forward, that is right around the corner. Meanwhile, I saw a couple cool videos on Baylor's social media. And don't have anything to throw up for you in terms of those videos. You can find them pretty easily, just the Baylor Athletics, I think, account, and certainly the basketball accounts. But the Foster Pavilion starting to fully, I guess, flap its wings, as it was kind of a situation where they were still very much under construction as the season was ongoing and not all the way 100% finished, but now getting there here in the summer, and to the point where, you know, they didn't have their full-blown locker rooms and workout facilities and all that stuff set when they were playing this past season, because they wanted to get in there as quickly as possible. And there was a lot of conversation surrounding that, you know, of should they have waited till next year, and, you know, what was that experience like not having the full meal deal? Well, now they're getting there, and next year they will have the full meal deal, locker rooms, practice courts, everything, all the paint finished and dried and all that good stuff. And some videos emerging from that and pictures emerging from that. I saw a little clip of Jeremy Roach, who's obviously accustomed to pretty nice things, having been at Duke the past few years. He had a pretty positive response to the unveiling of the portion that they saw. And just cool to see that the facilities are getting rounded out and getting to where they meant them to be and where they wanted them to be, and to see the reactions of players whenever they see new stuff is always pretty cool. And it looks like, based on what we have seen so far, that both the men's and women's team are, even though there's been drawings and everything, still just blown away by what they saw actually in person. And Very excited about what's to come for both basketball programs with these facilities now in their arsenal as well.
It looks awesome. I mean, all the pictures that they've posted today especially, and like you said, the reactions are awesome. They got pictures of the lockers and the weight room, which looks very state-of-the-art. I think I heard that they're going to post a video tomorrow, so I assume that video will be kind of more in-depth. Picture, you know, just kind of clips of what it looks like actually, because these pictures are more of the players just being there. One nugget that I think is interesting is VJ Edgecombe was in the picture, so nice to see that he's made it to Waco after spending all that time, obviously playing for the Bahamas, trying to qualify for the Olympics, and almost getting there as a full-time starter at 19 years old for the international team, which is crazy. That does not happen very often at all, very, very rare. So, really cool to see him in Waco. And then obviously just a lot of the other stuff that we knew was coming. We knew that it was going to be great. We knew it was going to be really cool. But I think, again, to see actual clips, actual pictures, reactions, it's a huge deal. And it's going to be a huge recruiting tool for Baylor as well going forward. That's going to be something that I think is really special. I know a lot of the football recruits have been talking about the new, you know, kind of football ops center that's going to be opening up. Should be very soon when that's open. And kids keep referring to that as, you know, I'm going to come up there when that's done. I can't wait to see it. Really excited to visit when it's completed. So that's going to be a huge recruiting tool for football. And this is going to be like that for basketball. Like they really need any more recruiting tools for basketball right now, but still nice to see.
Yeah, they're doing pretty well, even without the bells and whistles, but now they've got those bells and whistles. And based on the looks and the pictures that we've seen so far, big-time players that are already on the roster are pretty blown away by what they're seeing, and so that should bode well for future big fish they go and try to land. It's just another thing that Scott Drew and Nikki Collin can use as far as selling their program. And so, yeah, it's been cool to see some of the early glimpses and first looks into the close-to-finished Foster Pavilion with basketball getting all of its proper digs, locker rooms, and all of that, weight room set up properly. And, yeah, there's the football side of things as well. Haven't heard much about that lately. But if it was on track, which I assume it is, it's about any time now we're going to see that start to open up and see the football move in, and that ought to be a big game changer as well. That's been a long time coming and actually quite overdue for this program, because a lot of others have already had something like that, their own separate football facility. You know, Texas Tech's got their big grand like project, connecting project going on. And there's been various other updates, but for Baylor, they've been sharing basically football with, you know, the Simpson Center and all of that for quite a while now. So this is a game changer for football to have their own real true space to their own and have it all updated and all the bells and whistles as well. So very much looking forward to seeing the first glimpses into that too. And so, yeah, it's a big year in terms of facility upgrades for Baylor Athletics, for sure.
It definitely is. It's massive. I mean, just a massive turning point for the football program, like you said. Basketball, I think since they got to play in the arena last year, you kind of just were like, oh, it's already there. But for football, you know, we're still waiting to see when that product is finished. It was supposed to be done, I think, by fall camp. I don't know if it's going to be ready quite by then, but it should be ready by the beginning of the season, I would think.
You would hope so. Yeah, like I said, haven't heard an update on that in a little while, but starting to kind of shake the cobwebs off of the offseason, even though it's never really – there's not really been an offseason, quite frankly. But as everybody starts to kind of get into football mode again and drum up the news machine and all of that, I'm sure that will be one of the things we hear about here pretty soon is an update on that front. But, yeah, it's a busy time, even though it's about to get much busier. But the facilities are looking great. So there you are with that. Go check those pictures out if you haven't already. And as Grayson alluded to, I'm sure there will be more, you know, videos and whatnot of seeing some of the reactions from basketball in particular as they get moved in. So facilities looking up, football recruiting looking up, and the football season right around the corner. So here we are. Enjoy the good times, because right now it is pretty good. Meanwhile, we got the mailbag to get into. Man, I was hoping to be able to hold that for like five more seconds, but alas. So we got the mailbag and a bunch of questions to get into this week. And let's start off with Mikey. Thanks for all the amazing recruiting coverage to get us through the offseason and rebuild some hope in my heart. Couple of questions. Will all these major skill commits make Adam Schoebel question his flip? If not, any way to entice a different big-name quarterback? Or is Edward Griffin still their guy?
Right. I think the ship has sailed on Adam Schoble at this point. I just don't think that they're going to try to get back in on that. I think that has passed. That time has passed at this moment. And I think they like where they're at with Edward Griffin. I mean, they went out, found him, offered him, and he committed right after. I think he's their guy, and I don't see them, you know, pushing him out of the class to add a different quarterback. I don't think that's a good way to handle that. I don't think that would be smart. I think Edward Griffin is going to show a lot of people that he's a really, really good player. And I think it's really tough with him because I know his ranking isn't very high, but the numbers that he put up at Capel last year are that of more of a high three-star, four-star type guy. And so I do believe his ranking will adjust some going into his senior year and by the midpoint.
Any word on Josh White and Jordan Jenkins offseason? Realistic for them to push for starting roles or significant playing time, or has the coaching staff mostly moved on from them at this point and just consider them depth pieces?
Well, Josh White's going to play a huge role on special teams, and he'll be a backup linebacker, but I don't see any more than that for him. I think we've kind of seen, you know, who he is, what he can do, what he can't do, and so that's kind of my expectation for him. I don't see it for Jordan Jenkins. I think they have too many really good running backs ahead of him on the depth chart, and I don't see any path for him to having significant role on this team.
Yeah, it's I mean, there's always the chance, I guess, we get into the season he ends up playing more than expected or something for whatever reason. But beyond that, I mean, just looking at the roster, the depth chart, and just sort of what we know, it's, yeah, where's the snaps coming to make it worth his while and their while, and especially you start to see there's already three running back commits that are lined up behind him, from 25 having two to 26 having somebody locked in as well. And yeah, they're clearly, I mean, they're setting themselves up for more and more running backs, and you don't just have a bell cow like him anyways, but yeah, he's starting to get lost in the shuffle is my point.
Beyond that.
Yeah.
I mean, he is lost in the shuffle.
Yeah. So he's right there in the kind of mystery land of where does he kind of fit into the big picture. So we'll see how that goes for Jordan Jenkins. Scotty B, the Baylor King, how much improvement do you think Baylor football will have in terms of points per game offensively and defensively this year?
Yeah, I mean, I think there is going to be a huge shift in that because they were really poor in both of those categories a year ago. They averaged 23.1 points per game, which was 101st in the country. I think they're going to average around 30 a game. I really do. And if you're around 30 a game, you have a top 50 offense. Somewhere you might be able to be in the top 40 if you're just a little above 30. But I that's my expectation for their offense. I think they're going to score points this year. I have a lot of faith in Jake Spavital scoring, as long as the offense line isn't as bad as it was a year ago. As far as defensively, they gave up 33.3 points per game, which was 116th in the country a year ago. I think they can get that number to maybe in the mid-20s, you know, maybe around like 26, 27. I don't think they're going to be dominant on defense, but I think they can take a huge step forward. So if you're around those numbers, I mean, you're a bowl team. I mean, that's kind of where you're at. You're right around being a bowl team if you're around those kind of points.
Let's see. Clever username 99. What are your guys' thoughts on running the ball on third and long? Rewatching last year, Grimes loved calling runs in that scenario. It felt like we were waving the white flag.
The only game I remember that ever worked in was against Utah, and it did work. They ran the ball a few times and got like Dom Richardson getting, you know, 11 yards on third and 10, which I don't view that as sustainable. And sometimes you get a good look and you can kind of take advantage of that. But in general, I agree with you. I mean, it was ridiculous to see, you know, third and eight and you're just running the football, basically conceding that you're going to punt. But I think that just kind of leads back into what, you know, we've talked about, Craig, just the offense being kind of boring and not innovative enough. And just the amount of throws that were behind the line of scrimmage or right at the line of scrimmage were really hard to watch. I've been watching some replays of games and watching those bootleg rollouts where you're throwing the ball a yard downfield and the guy getting tackled immediately. Those things just didn't work, and you'd like to be able to see them take more shots and be more creative in the passing game.
Yeah, last year's offense was a total bore to watch, and I know it wasn't necessarily always the play calling. I do feel like sometimes it was, though. It did feel like they were just waving the white flag at times and just saying, all right, let's hope our defense gets a stop. I mean, just a lot of series where it's just three and out, and you're like, why does this look so uninspired? I mean, you're not getting the ball five more times in this game. Like, some sense of urgency, for the love of God, please.
Yeah.
And just a lot of just series, and this wasn't exclusive to the offense, but I know Jeff Grimes, like, takes offense that they got blamed as much as they did for last year, and it's like, well, the defense at least had a lot of, like, you could say, like, there's changeover and DC didn't work out. And like the offense, yeah, the line was bad. It was worse than they expected it to be. But like, I don't think you had as much room for excuses for being as mid level as you were, or if below level, mid level.
Right. And that's, I mean, that is on him as an offense coordinator to realize the offense line is like, I mean, they weren't bad last year. They were horrific. And I don't know how that was not seen or known, and that's kind of the area where you're like, well, if they had an offense line, they probably wouldn't have been bad. Honestly, offensively, they probably would have been pretty good, because we saw Jeff Grimes' offense work when the offense line was good.
Yeah, but it was just nowhere close to being ready. And I mean, whatever you want to point to, like unexpected retirement or injuries, or like, I mean, I know there's some things that are out of your control, but it's like, man, y'all didn't have any idea like it was that bad as you rolled into a season. Like, my goodness. And so not all of it was play calling. Some of it was just you simply couldn't execute certain things that you wanted to be able to do. You couldn't block long enough for your quarterback to have 2 seconds to even look downfield. So those things, you know, can all go back to the O-line or whatever. But there were definitely times where you're just like, all right, what even is this play calling? And I'm sure there will be moments this year with Spavital where we say the same thing. But just last year as a whole was just – it was hard to watch for 12 weeks. Yeah. I mean, it really was. So running the ball on third and long, I mean, we'll see that as probably a changeup from time to time. And it did work, like in the Utah game, as you mentioned. But, yeah, there were times last year as we've now expanded upon where you were less scratching your head, for sure, especially with some of the play calling. Useless Kim Degree, what are your views on our kicking game? Rewatching a lot of games from last year, missed field goals inside of 40 yards seem to be a repeat pattern all year. Any hope we can improve in that aspect of special teams?
Yeah, I mean, I think there's optimism that they can get better there in the kicking game. I mean, when you look at Isaiah Hankins has been around for a long time. They still have Jack Stone. They're bringing in Connor Hawkins, who is a freshman, a walk-on out of Liberty Hill. So they're trying some things to make sure that there's competition there and that they're pushing each other. But I think Isaiah Hankins is going to end up being the guy, and it's just a matter of him being more consistent. And the hard part with Baylor is that over the years, it's basically been bad kicking year, good kicking year, bad kicking year, good kicking year. It's been really weird, and it's been some of the same names, right? It's like, you know, you have one year where, you know, a guy kicks really well, and then the very next year he's terrible, and then the next year he does really good. So it's just been a really weird kind of phenomenon that I've seen at Baylor, at least.
Yeah, there hasn't been a lot of consistency. I mean, there's definitely room for improvement, I think, across the board on this team, and with Matthew Pallage, you know, expected to be a bit more involved in special teams, you know, just based on the shift in his defensive duties. You know, he wasn't involved last year. They had, what was it, Tyler, I forget, the special teams assistant.
Pallage should.
But Pallage, you would think, would be a bit more involved there, since he's got a little less on his plate defensively, which I think would be a good thing for that unit. Yeah. And so hopefully that's where you see some of the improvement. But, yeah, it's been very up and down. There's no consistency. It's hard to predict because, like you said, one year the kicker, just let's just say, because there's been multiple examples, is great, and the next year same guy's back and like nothing's changed and he's just not as good,
right?
Like he's been reading press clippings. That's for kickers. Like what? Yeah. Like,
I mean, you can go back so far, like, you know, Connor Martin, Chris Callahan.
Like, there's multiple examples,
you know,
of it.
I mean, it's just been John Mayers. I mean, it's just like crazy where you're like, wow, this guy's the future of the kicker position. And then, oh my goodness, like, you're going to have to bring in another kicker. And then he does good the next year. It's just been very, very weird. Good news for Baylor is Palmer Williams, I think, is going to be a really, really good punter, like a weapon, a true weapon for them as a punter. And they brought in Jamal Bell as far as returners go, and he was obviously elite at that during his time at Nevada. So a couple nice improvements there.
Yeah, so Useless Kim Degree, I think there is room for optimism, just to what extent. I wouldn't start expecting elite play there because it's been rare, if ever, to see that, and especially consistently. But I do think there's reasons why that can also be an improved grouping this year, especially the kicking side of things. Pawpaw Bear, have you heard anything about Michael Trigg and the tight end room?
I mean, again, right now it's just a whole lot of, you know, football school and workouts and things like that. But I continue to believe, based off what happened in the spring, that, you know, Michael Trigg is going to be a huge part of their offensive game plan. They're going to find ways to feature him in the passing game. But I also think Kelsey Johnson will be very involved as well. He's a very good blocker, a very reliable pass catcher, a guy that breaks tackles well if you can get him the ball in the open field. So those two guys are who I'm expecting to play the most. But I will say I think Matthew Klopfenstein and Hawkins Polly are two guys that I think could carve out a role. We've seen Gavin Yates play a lot kind of in that fullback role. So they have a good room. It's pretty deep. They got a bunch of different body types, a bunch of different skill sets in the room. But I think Trigg as a receiving threat is going to be fun to watch, especially down the field.
Yeah, I think a big part of their success will come down to just how much of a playmaker Michael Trigg really is. Drake Dabney left some pretty big shoes to fill. He had a really good year last year, and I think he's going to be a nice weapon for TCU as they pivot away from, what's his name from Temple?
Jared Wiley.
I think Jared Casey for some reason. That was the Kansas tight end. Jared Wiley.
He torched Baylor last year.
Yeah, oh, he did. Gosh. He did. Yeah. And, you know, they're going to get Dabney involved on that level, I would think. So, you know, he's a loss. But when I was kind of looking at just my confidence in, like, just different groups, like, I feel really good about the tight end room because I'm not expecting them to be, like, All-American, like Rob Gronkowski's out there, but in terms of numbers and depth and just having guys to do what they need to do, block, catch on occasion, you know, make a block, do the things that you need your tight ends to do in this offense where I don't think you're like super tight end heavy. I think they've got everything that they need. So long as Trigg proves to be a reliable pass catcher and playmaker, I don't know really where they're wanting other than just like, yeah, you'd always love a Gronkowski or, Kyle Pitts or like this all elite, like super freak tight end. But that's like very rare. So based on, you know, just the averages and what they have, I think you got everything you need in tight end at tight end right now.
Yeah, Trigg fits that mold, though, of a guy that you could actually play outside. And when you look at Baylor's wide receiver depth chart, I think they're going to play him outside some because, you know, right now it's Keytron Jackson, Hal Presley, and then Josh Cameron, and that's pretty much it. I mean, you know, Micah Gifford is a young guy still, so I think you're going to see Trigg move around a lot. I think he's going to be a phenomenal weapon because he is kind of in that mold of a Kyle Pitts. Not saying he is Kyle Pitts, but he's built in that mold as far as being a big, athletic, rangy tight end who can make plays in the red zone as well. So it'd be huge if he can hit because if he does, I think it raises the ceiling of the offense.
Yeah, a lot depends on if he hits or not. And then obviously a lot also depends on if the young guys just continue to improve and get better. You know, Matthew Klopfenstein and Hawkins Polly and whoever you want to point to, so long as they continue to improve, then that's a room that you feel pretty good about. Doc Crow, who of Jeremy Evans, Carmelo Jones, or Josh White will end up with the most snaps at the end of the year?
Wow, that's a great question. The addition of Ra-Ra Dilworth has kind of crowded that room a little bit, I would say, as far as how much playing time everyone's going to get. I would say it's probably whoever is the primary backup to Matt Jones, because I think Ra-Ra is going to have to play Will primarily. And so I guess right now that would be Carmelo Jones, but I think of the three of them, I think Jeremy Evans is the best player. So it's kind of that, you know, tug and pull of, okay, does it matter what position they're playing or the better player? And I guess I'll lean towards the better player. I'll go with Jeremy Evans getting the most snaps. I think he's a quality player who's going to be really good for Baylor in the next few years.
Yeah, I don't blame you if you go Carmelo Jones either, but I think it's one of those two guys versus Josh White. Just in terms of, I think, impact and amount of usage and all those types of things. So I know there's huge hopes for Josh White coming over from LSU, but I think right now you're looking at him just to be a sturdy backup and play good special teams and, you know, be there for whatever they need. But I don't think, whereas the other two maybe still have some more breakout potential, I don't know that his is really there at this point in terms of seeing much more of a ceiling than we already have.
Right. I mean, if he wins the backup job at Mike, we could be changing our tune on that. But I do kind of agree with you. Just what we've seen, it just hasn't quite been good enough. Whereas these younger guys, it's like, well, they could make the jump, right? So that's kind of what it comes down to.
Does Thomas and Colton Thomason start any games throughout the season?
Absolutely. I think there's a chance he's starting the first game of the year. I don't know that that would mean bad things about what Baylor has. I do think just talent-wise and size-wise, especially after losing Kurt Daneker, he fits that more than any of the guys on the roster, right? I mean, because Daneker was like 330 pounds, and that's kind of where Thomason is trending. No one else on the interior of their offensive line has that kind of size. And so I'm curious as the season progresses, if the guards aren't stepping up, if maybe he slides in and takes a spot, or maybe even at tackle, even though I do think he's going to end up being a guard for most of his career.
Last thing from Doc Crowell: considering there are two running backs committed in the next class, there will be seven running backs on the roster next year. With the schematic changes, will we have to see roster churn at the end of the season for the running back room?
Yeah. Yeah, they're going to have some roster churn in that room, because you're bringing back, what, Richard Reese, Dawson Pendergrass, Jordan Jenkins, Joseph Dodds, Bryson Washington. You're bringing in
some of these guys we've not seen or barely seen at all.
Like, you're bringing in Michael Turner. You're bringing in Caden Knighton. So, yeah, there's going to have to be some churn. But I do think in general, like, let's say you return four of those guys and then you end up with six running backs. I don't think that's the worst. I think that's pretty typical, I would say.
Yeah. Wyatt Smith, do you think we will get any 26 commits after Junior Day weekend?
I do. I think they may get one or two after the weekend. I could definitely see that. I don't know if it'll happen immediately. I'm not sitting here saying, oh yeah, there's a bunch of guys that are kind of right there about to commit or that I know are making their decision. But I do think Baylor's got some momentum right now, so they might be able to land one or two, you know, after the weekend.
Any movement with Tyler Lockhart?
I haven't really heard anything about Tyler. I know he decommitted from Auburn. His primary relationship was with Christian Robinson, so I don't know how much he's talked to Jamar Chaney. I will say the trend right now is Mississippi State. So while I think he's probably had communication with Baylor, I just don't know that it's gone anything beyond that. At least I haven't heard that yet.
Wyatt also said, as always, thank you. Well, thank you, Wyatt. And also ask, with recent success in the 25 class, do you think DJ Sanders may give Baylor another chance?
Yeah, no, I don't see that. Him canceling his official visit was pretty much him saying that Baylor was out on his recruitment. For whatever reason that may be, I don't really see it happening. I know he's got a lot of offers, and you want to talk about NIL. I think there's some serious NIL being thrown around for DJ Sanders. So
it's A&M Texas battle as well.
Yeah, and then Nebraska looked like they tried to drop the bag recently as well. So there's been a lot of interesting kind of things going on in his recruitment. So I don't really see that happening for Baylor. I also want to just say, like, I know Baylor has a lot of momentum. That doesn't mean that we should just go look at their offers and then just immediately say, like, oh yeah, they're going to be in on this guy now. Like, that's not necessarily how this is going to work. They're going to target the guys early on that they really, really like, prioritize those guys, and then try to finish it out at the end. But it's not necessarily going to be, oh, we haven't recruited a guy in 6 months, and now, oh, he's a five-star, let's circle back, and now Baylor's going to land them. It doesn't quite work like that.
Well, relationships and interests still matter. The money's more of the finishing touch and keep you in the game, and then maybe decide the game for you when it comes down to the wire of, yeah, we can match that or we can beat that or whatever, but you need to look at the foundation of the recruitments and see, is there a real relationship there? Is it just based purely on NIL? If it's just based purely on NIL, they're probably not going to be all that involved or all that successful, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, it's got to be relationship first, build from that, and then, hey, if we need to go get this done to finish this out, then we'll go line up our NIL stuff and make sure that it works for you. All right, let's see here. Billy 21, do the Bears have any high school O-line or D-line hogs on the radar? Need them, in all capitals, said Billy 21.
Yeah, they definitely need them, but I would say, you know, defensive line is interesting because, I mean, they have Christopher Johnson, Kamarian Morgan, Brody Watley, and Jackson Blackwell all committed. They've kind of hit all the different, you know, parts of the defensive line. When you look at nose tackle, edge, defensive end, like, they've really kind of hit on the defensive line. I would say I could see them maybe adding another edge type. It seemed like they wanted another guy like that when they were trying to recruit Max Granville, so I could see them maybe circling back to that position. As far as the offensive line goes, I mean, they haven't sent out hardly any offers. So right now, you know, Matthew Parker took an official visit. He's committed to Vanderbilt, so he's still, I think, an option if the season goes well. But outside of that, I think it might just be them trying to circle back on guys if, you know, other programs have down seasons. But until offers go out, I mean, it's really hard to say. Maybe at camp this weekend they bring in some guys and send out an offer or something.
Yeah, Vanderbilt, you're in the SEC, but, like, not really. Like, it's weird. Like, you know, you go play in the SEC, and it's like, yeah, you do technically, but it's sort of like a participation ribbon more than it's like, you know, going to play for LSU or Bama or, you know, the usual suspects. Yeah. But, hey, Nashville's cool. You know, it's not my favorite, but I can see the appeal there. And
He committed to them early before he took the Baylor official visit. Yeah. But, I mean, you look at Vanderbilt's schedule. And
it's a great education, too. Don't get me wrong. So there's reasons to go there. But in terms of football, I just don't see the appeal. Even the SEC thing, it's like, yeah, that's great. So you're the last place team every year in the SEC. Right. That's cool. But, hey, I'm not knocking him, obviously. I just think that that's an offer that I think he could beat out if, you know, things work out the right way. Let's see. Bearcats, if we start out 2-0 with a win over Tarleton State in Utah, how much would that change your outlook on the season? For me, not much. I mean, that's one game. It would change it by one game. I don't think that early on the season you're really, like, you win that game and all of a sudden it's like, all right, Big 12 title incoming or anything like that. You know, to go win in Salt Lake would be a really big deal. But it wouldn't drastically change my opinion. I wouldn't go from, like, I think they're going to win 7 games to they're going to win 10 now. It would just mean, like, hey, they might be a little bit better than I expected, but that's about where I'm stopping there.
Well, I mean, the first thing is they are 100% a bowl team if they beat Utah. They're making a bowl.
Yeah,
they're making a bowl if they beat Utah. The other thing I would say is, you know, I mean, if you do beat Utah on the road, think again, that tells you you can win any game on your schedule. I mean, Utah's the clear, far and away favorite with Kansas State. So, while I wouldn't say, okay, yeah, now they're going to win the Big 12, I will say that, I mean, that'd be a very impressive win and one that is pretty telling that Baylor has the talent to compete every single week, which is all you can hope for. And then if things bounce the right way, you know, maybe this is a team that wins, you know, 9 or 10 games if they're able to beat Utah. I think that game would matter quite a bit to kind of the outlook of the season, how I would view it as well, because Utah feels like one that would give Baylor a lot of problems with their defensive front against Baylor's offensive line. So, I don't know. It would change some things, and it would lock in a bowl game for me for sure.
It would definitely flip, I think, most of the predictions for that game, because my allergies are killing me today. Sorry. I do think it would flip most everybody's predictions for that game, because I don't know that too many people are predicting them to walk into Salt Lake City and win against Utah. So it would be a huge surprise in that regard. But, yeah, I mean, it would definitely be a big early season splash that could get a lot of momentum going and a lot of belief going early on, and that could pay huge dividends. But, yeah, I would love to see that and then really give you a legitimate response rather than projecting, like, you know, a month out, because it's hard to say for sure. But it does seem like that would be a pretty large win and could really set a proper tone for 2024. And look, you're right about the bowl game, because it's dicey on whether that's going to be feasible or not. If you look at their schedule, there's no 6 guaranteed wins on that schedule. So to go and pick one off that looks like everybody's predicting it to be a loss would really do do a good bit of good for you to get an early win like that. All right, Sikkim Bears 23. With the recent duo of Knighton and Turner committing, I went back and looked through some prior running back commitments. The first one that comes to mind is Jordan Jenkins, who was rated a 91, same as Turner and 2 points higher than Knighton. Given his high evaluation, why do you think Jenkins has not panned out to date? Do the new backs carry less risk than he did? And where do you think Joseph Dodds factors in? As I know, he was a borderline 4-star guy with some SEC interest. So why has Jenkins not panned out? Let's start there.
I think the problem for Jenkins is kind of, it's a couple things. He played at a small school, and I think, you know, him being the biggest, strongest, fastest guy in the field pretty much every game, obviously that helps when you're looking at numbers and stats. I would also say he's dealt with a lot of injuries, which has not been helpful. I think that has really set him back. He's had injuries, it feels like, every single year during his time at Baylor. And then outside that, I don't think he was a very good fit in the wide zone scheme. I don't think it ended up being a good fit for him. And now he's just kind of been passed up, I think. So you put all that together, and that's that's kind of why this has happened, I think, to Jordan Jenkins. As far as carrying less risk, I think Michael Turner carries a lot less risk. He's already a very polished running back, a guy who I think you could see play very early on in his career. I think Caden Knighton has some of this risk, but I also think Caden Knighton's speed, he has track speed. I mean, his track times are legit, so you know his speed is going to translate, whereas Jenkins did not, and his speed did not translate to the same level that I think Knighton's will. So I do think they carry some less risk. As far as Joseph Dodds go, you know, I like him. I like him as a running back. I think he's going to be sneaky, sneaky good for Baylor going forward. I think he can actually fit pretty well in this new inside zone scheme. I mean, it's tough because you got so many options. You got Dawson Pendergrass. You got Richard Reeves. You got Bryson Washington. So how are they all going to get carries? But I think in general, Baylor has a really, really deep running back room, and I think it's just going to play itself out over the next year or so.
So Sikkim Bears 23, appreciate your questions, and hopefully that that answers what you were looking for. And we'll wrap it up here with Cooter BU. Great stuff regarding O-line recruiting and having just one commit in this class. How much is it about our struggles to land guys versus just taking more of a we are better off using the portal for O-lineman philosophy? I'm actually fine with focusing our O-line efforts in the portal. Stay old, developed, and proven is how I see it. What are your thoughts on that line of thinking? Perhaps there's a little of both philosophy and failure, being that we have had some decommitments.
So I think for this year, it feels like that might be the philosophy. But the reason for that is, obviously, the three offensive line coaches in the last 7 months, you know, 8 months now as we're getting closer to August. But that just did not help. It set them back. It led to decommitments. It led to, you know, Mason Miller not having the same kind of relationships that Eric Mateos had, because Eric Mateos had a long time to kind of form those. So it set them back. So I think that's where this year, I do think the transfer portal will have to be used heavily. I think they could take some young guys in the transfer portal, though, as well as some older guys to start for you next year, but some young guys that you get to develop. I do think you have to be able to develop guys. Like, you got to be able to recruit high school guys and then develop them. But I think in general, they've done a nice job of continuing to stay young while also having older veteran starters. And now they're just trying to find a mesh point for that as some of these young guys grow up and turn to upperclassmen.
So, Cooter, appreciate the question there. Hopefully that answers what you were looking for as well. And, yeah, very big year for the offensive line, and hopefully they can get some momentum building up there. But be curious to just kind of see their overall approach, especially when you look at this 2025 class, and as good as it looks, there's one offensive lineman in that class, and there's a lot of just questions about how they – you know, go about their approach. But, yeah, not having any consistency there as far as, you know, coaching the last couple of years last year has thrown the whole offseason, I think, for kind of a bit of a whirlwind. That combined with losing and just uncertainty and all that adds up to some questions, I think, up front. So I appreciate y'all's questions this week. Everybody that was a part of the mailbag, everybody watching, everybody listening. Before we get out of here, Grayson, anything to leave everybody with?
No, just be sure to check out the premium side. And obviously, we got a lot of recruiting content, a lot of football content coming up. We're going to have tons of insider notes, tons of, you know, videos and pictures. Craig, I know you'll be at practices as well. I'll be out there. And so a lot to look forward to. This is one of the most fun times of the year, I would say. So be sure to check out Sikkim 365 Premium. And then, of course, 365 Sports Radio, 3 to 6, Monday through Friday.
Yes, please hit that like and subscribe button before you leave us today, or wherever platform you're on, especially Baylor Athletics on Sikkim 365, the YouTube page. And, yeah, each afternoon, 365 Sports, heading towards 55,000 on the, I guess, the subscription side of things. So excited to see that keep building as well. But until next time, that'll do it for us this week. For Grayson Grudenhaver and Garrett Ross, we'll be back with more next Tuesday live at 11:15. I'm Craig Smoke. Appreciate your time as always, and we'll talk to you then. This has been the Bearcast on Sikkim365.com.